So today we're going to take a look at the beginning of the sixth reading. Even though today is Thursday, we usually learn something from Chamishi. This has a little to do with Hei Tevis. Hei Tevis is a Yom Tov that's connected to Sfarim. Although, as one of my colleagues accurately said, the mitzvah of matzah is identified with Pesach, but there's more to Pesach than matzah. Matzah becomes a paradigm, but it's Geula, it's a transformation, a birth of the Jewish nation. Hei Tevis is more than in Sfarim, but Sfarim become the face of Hei Tevis and the study of Torah, which comes from Sfarim. Although, as I spoke about on Tuesday night, there's more to Sfarim than study of Torah itself. In the fifth reading of Parshas Vayigash, the Torah details the actual arrival in Egypt. And it talks about names. Everybody's names are mentioned. We go through the family of Yaakov Avinu, which in the end numbers 70. As the Torah gives us a roundup. Once we include Yosef and Yosef's family, we have Kol HaNefesh Leves Yankiv, the end of the fifth reading, chapter 46, verse 47. All the souls that were connected to the house of Jacob, Haboi Mitzrayimah, who came to the land of Egypt, Shivim, there were 70. And this becomes the foundation of the nation of Israel, of Am Yisrael. And the interesting thing is that the 70th soul was born just as they entered. And this was a little girl. And her name was Yocheved. And she goes on to do some very famous things, including take care of all the babies, and perhaps, most famously, her own baby, whose name is Moshe Rabbeinu. So Yocheved is kind of made in Israel, but born on the way into Egypt. And she straddles two worlds. Yocheved becomes the nexus between the world that was and the world that becomes. The world of the pre-exile world, and then that leads into the post-exile world with her son, Moshe Rabbeinu. At any rate, this is the idea of Shivim Nafesh. In the end, once you counted up all the souls with Yaakov, you end up with the number 70, and there's much said about this, including the idea that there are 70 nations of the world, and that the 70 souls of Yaakov's family have the ability to illuminate and transform the lives and the times of all of the world's population, all 70 nations. Now we go into the details of the arrival. Just before they arrive in the land of Mitzrayim, it's almost like going back, because we talk in the fifth reading about coming in. These are the souls that are Harboyim, that are coming into Mitzrayim. In the sixth reading, the Torah gives you now the details. Ves Yehuda Sholach Lefanav, before they arrived in the land of Mitzrayim, principally before Yocheved is even born, Yehuda, he sent before him. And he sent him El Yosef. And the reason that he sent Yehuda El Yosef was Lahoyreis Lefanav, to give direction, to show before him. Goshna, Vayavayu, Arza Goshen. And then the Torah says, they came to the land of Goshen. So this pasuk, this verse, describes what happened before they came into Mitzrayim and when they arrived in Mitzrayim. Before they came, Yaakov Avinu sends Yehuda, sends him to Yosef, and it's Lahiris Lavanov. It's in order to show the way, which we don't really know what that means right now, but that's what the pasuk says, that's what the verse says. And the end of verse 28 is Vayavayu Arza Goshen. They come to the land of Goshen. The subsequent psukim deal with the reunion of Yaakov and Yosef. Now that Yaakov has arrived, Yosef is aware of it, and Yosef himself comes to greet his father, and Yaakov responds, Yosef weeps. There's like a whole narrative, a whole story that unfolds. But before we go into that narrative, we have to understand, why was Yehuda sent before him? The Torah is very specific. It doesn't describe all the details of the journey. It tells us about the last stop in Be'er Sheva, how Yaakov Avinu was feeling at the notion of leaving the land of Israel behind, as we learned yesterday, going into Golos. He didn't feel good about that, which is just fine, as long as you're not afraid. And then we know that before he actually comes, he sends Yehuda before him. So the question, of course, is, what was Yehuda going for? The Torah says Lahoyres, but we don't have clarity. So let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says, Lahoyres Lefanov. The purpose of Yehuda's mission was Lahoyres, to give direction. Says Rashi, Ketargume. You have to look in the Targum Unculus, and that'll be a good beginning for you to understand this pasuk in a straightforward way. The pasuk says, in Unculus, Lefano Kodomoyi. That's how Unculus translates it, which means to empty out a space, to clear out, to pave the way. Lefanais loy makim, to clear out a space that they should be able to live in. Ulahayrais, and to give instruction or direction. Hayra'a means instructions, like the word Torah itself, which means instructions. Hora'at shimush in modern Hebrew means the instructions for use. So the idea of hayra'a, that they should give instructions, heich yisyashiva, how exactly should they settle in? So Yaakov wants to come, and when he comes, everybody already has an appropriate place settled for them. They know exactly where to go. Yehuda will be the directing traffic. He came before. You will live here. You live here. Everybody will be apportioned. They'll all have places of residence, and they can begin to function immediately. Okay, so that's the meaning of Lahiris. Lahiris means he'll be guiding traffic. What does it say, Lefanov? So Lefanov, Rashi says, he sent Yehuda to do this Kodem Sheyagia L'Sham, before he arrived over there. Now, this doesn't really resonate. It doesn't really make sense to us perfectly because, like, what would have happened if they would come there and then figure out who's going to live where? Like, why does this have to be like a seamless arrival? You're going to come and Yehuda will have been there already and he will have already arranged everything, besides the fact that Yosef had promised to arrange everything. So Yosef presumably already prepared everything. He was a very capable man. He ran a country. Sure, he could welcome a family. It's not such a big family, 70 people. Big deal. Like, people resettle millions of refugees. 70 people. You figure it out. Give them a big mansion to live in. And then if they don't like it, in a few weeks, they could kind of relocate it. Like, what was the reason to send Yehuda? And have to be Lefanov. They couldn't do it on the day they arrive. Somebody had to go there before, so when Yaakov would come, already everything was in place. Why? So Rashi himself kind of knows there's something inadequate here. There's something on a level of Pshuta Shel Mikra. There's multiple questions that pop up that don't explain fully why it is that Yehuda has to be sent Lefanov before him. It's not really clear. So Rashi says, Lefanov, the Medrash Agada is, Lehoireis Lefanov, the word to show the way, really is connected to the word Hoira'a, or direction for a member of the Jewish nation. Where does directions come for us? How do we know how to deal with situations? The answer is we have a Torah. And therefore, Lahoyrois means Latakin Leibes Talmud, to establish a place in which Torah should be studied. Shemisham Teitzah Heira. That's where direction will come from. So there'll be questions what to do, and the questions will be directed towards the Beis Heira, towards the place where Torah is being studied. And from the first day, from the first hour, immediately when they come, there'll be Torah being studied, and that's where directions will come from. Now, this is the way Rashi chooses Pshuta Shel Mikra. It must be Pshuta Shel Mikra. I have to tell you that there are other Mefarshim that seem to say things that on the surface resonate much more. For example, the Chizkuni, he says that Yaakov did not want to travel through the urbanized, settled areas of Mitzrayim. He didn't want to be affected by it. He didn't want to hear what was going on out there. He sent Yehuda to chart a path. He says, give me a detour. I don't want to take Main Street. I don't want to see the ugliness of Egypt. I don't want to drive through Times Square. I'm not interested in being in the areas where there's garish stuff. It's not for me. I didn't want to hear it. I don't want my children to see it. It's bad enough. Take a look at the hieroglyphic in Egypt. You see what made life tick in those days. I don't want to see that. You find, he says, Yehuda, you be the GPS. You're going to find us a different way in. Like, we're going to use the back roads. And Yehuda was a strong person. Yehuda had the virtue of Baal Tshuva. Yaakov is not afraid that Yehuda will be influenced. And he says, this way we'll keep the Jewish people cloistered. Remember, the children of Yaakov were shepherds. Why shepherds? They avoided contact with the outside world. The outside world was a dangerous place for them. They were afraid of being influenced. And they wanted to insulate themselves. So Yehuda was the one who could be strong enough on the outside, at least to confront the challenges that worldliness provided, or worldliness would make. Yehuda would guide them so that the weaker ones shouldn't have to deal with those challenges. Okay, I mean, that's what the Chizkuni says. It makes sense. That's why Yehuda had to go first, because Yosef wouldn't be sensitive to those things. Yosef lived in there, but Yehuda would be. Or, for example, you have what the Abar Benel says, that how would Yosef know Yaakov got there? So, Lahiris Lefanov, make sure you tell Yosef, he comes and greets his family. This makes perfect sense. Send the expeditionary force, so to speak, first. Yehuda will be sent. Yehuda will come. He'll run before everybody. He says, Yosef, they're coming. And he's going with kids, little children, families. Takes a little longer. And Yehuda would make a quick just makes sense. Rashi doesn't deal with that. There are two logical things. Rashi doesn't even deal with it. I mean, you have, for example, Rabbeinu Bechaya, who talks about Yehuda taking care of settling them in, giving them an appropriate place to live. That really is hard to understand. It's hard to accept because Yosef was there. And this is the principal issue, it seems. Yosef promised to take care of Yaakov and his family. And Yosef would understand what they would need. And he would prepare them. Why was it that Yaakov does not feel comfortable relying on Yosef? Yosef didn't know?
No, Yaakov didn't know.
Yaakov knew Yosef is there. Yosef sent a message.
His position.
Sure, he knew his position. He says, go and tell my father, you saw it with your own eyes, you saw the power that I have, you saw the ability, the wherewithal. You know everything. Go tell him everything. This is really not a simple verse. It seems to be entirely superfluous. And the fact that Yaakov would have done something superfluous is a question in and of itself, but the Torah talks about this. The Torah is emphasizing this and telling us about it. What's the lesson for us? Like, we don't know so many details of that journey. We don't even know how Yocheved was born. That's a Medrash. That's not specified. We go with Shivim Nefesh. But the Medrash says, if you go and start counting up all the names, you'll come up with 69. So it's a contradiction. Here it says Shivim. Here it says 70. Count the names, you get 69. How do we reconcile this? So there's a Torah Shebaal Peh, an oral tradition, that Yocheved was born and completed the number 70. It doesn't say it in the Torah. But this the Torah has to talk about. That Yehuda was sent in front of El Yosef. We're not ignoring the fact that Yosef was there. He was sent to Yosef. There was some kind of deficiency that Yosef had. Lahir is the fun of Geshner. There's a Litvish avort. They say that Yosef sent a message to Yaakov. He sent the agolos, sent the wagons. As if to say, I still remember the last thing we learned. So in the Litvish yeshiva world, sometimes they could sit on the same page of Gemara for like 3 months. So he said, he's still learning the same sugya. He's still on the same topic 22 years later. Better have a new Rosh Yeshiva. You got to move this along. Okay, it's what they call a cute vitz. It's a nice little vart. That can't really adequately explain this. So we have to understand, and Rashi doesn't leave one answer or the other. He gives both. He says it's about living quarters and it's about yeshiva. Both answers are necessary together to comprise the Pshuta Shel Mikra answer. This has to be a tapestry of multiple things going on. There has to be more than one idea being conveyed here of Lahiris. Lahiris has to have double meanings. It has to have, not redundant, but it has to have multiple messages for us. And only then do we have the Pshuta Shel Mikra. So this is really hard to understand. Okay, so let's go. Let's see what the Rebbe says now. So we learned two sikhs, two different parts of a sikh from the Rebbe. The Rebbe really talks about both of these answers, the first answer and the second answer. In a way which you'll see, A, it answers the question, B, it should be speaking to us too. So on page Dalad Shin, it should be the equivalent of 304, in Simon Chav Gimel, in the Beauty of Chumash, here we have a quote, the quote of the first part of Rashi, Lahiris Lafanov. He says, Kitargumai, the first part of Rashi was Lefanis Lemakim. Clear out of space. Clear out of space. He doesn't even say to settle in, he says to clear out of space. That's the meaning of Shalach Lefanov. Lefanov is almost like Lefanis, to clear out. And then that will tell them, Hey Chish Yashav, how they'll live. So the Rebbe asked, it's actually the last Fabrengen before he fell ill in Parshas Vayigash. The Rebbe said like this. Yesh lohavim. This has to be understood. L'shem ma hoya yankev tzarech l'shleich l'shehuda. What was the point of this mission? Bobisha she Yosef hoya manhigo shel Eretz Mitzrayim. Yosef was, for all practical purposes, the leader of Egypt. He was the CEO, COO, whatever else you wanted to say. He got the stuff done. The Pharaoh did fancy Pharaoh stuff, and he was walked around in linen and looked pretty. But Yosef really ran the country. So Yosef's running the country. And if Yosef is running the country and he hasn't seen his family for over two decades, and this is a big deal, and he said, Raid, Al Tamid, come right down. Don't stay behind. Don't delay. I'll take care of you. I promise. Everything will be fine. Everything will be great. Do you think that Yosef was going to take a chance of making a less than great first impression? Do you think he was going to allow the family to settle in and then show up 3 days later? Oh, how you guys doing? You don't have food? Oh, I'm sorry. I should have arranged it. I didn't get around to it. I mean, like, really? Yosef organized everything, engineered this whole thing. And he was fully capable. There was no limitations that he had. So it's without a question that he had the wherewithal to prepare appropriately. And surely when Yaakov came, there was somebody there to take them through customs quickly. And they came to the hotel room and there was already cut up fruit and a card. Like, he prepared everything for sure. I mean, come on. He's a classy guy, Yosef. He wouldn't have allowed them to arrive and then say, oh, one second, we didn't take care of you yet. So what are you sending Yehuda for? Does Yaakov have such a low opinion of Yosef that he expected Yosef wouldn't take care? It actually doesn't make sense. So the Rebbe said, this is a way to understand it. B'kach she'sholach es Yehuda l'Mitzrayim. By sending Yehuda to Mitzrayim before everybody came, b'kesh yankiv l'hadgish, Father Jacob wanted to emphasize. He's trying to send a message. And that was, she'gam kesh Yehudi nimtza b'golos, even at such time when a Yid finds his or herself in golos, la'amite shel davar, in truth, hu naila mimenu. We are not really part of the golos. We are not part of the fabric of society. We are apart from society. We are not under their influence. As the famous words of the Rebbe Rashab, which became even more famous in the Friedrich Rebbe uttered them under the watchful eyes of the KGB, after being arrested, after having a death sentence commuted, after having hard labor commuted, after all that, he got out there in a train station and thousands of Hasidim came to see him in Yubis Thomas. And what did he say? He said the body was sent into Golos, not the Neshama. Nobody has the right to control Yiddish and Neshama. So you have to remember that. Maybe there's physical duress, but the Neshama of a Yid is always free. So because this is the case, and because you don't get a second chance to make first impressions, and because you have to set the foundation up right, and if you don't set a foundation up right, everything kind of gets faulty afterwards. It wasn't good enough for Yosef to prepare the place. Do you know why? Yosef is a tzaddik. But Yosef was also chelik mehashilton ha-mitzri. Yosef was part of Egypt. That was what he represented. His job in the end was Egypt. And because his job was Egypt, ultimately, Yosef's part of the system. But Yankov doesn't want the Jewish people to be inducted into the system. He wants them at all times to live within but above. Never fully part of that. And because Yosef is part of Shilta Mitzrayim, a Shilta in Yosef's power, Nitalei de Parai. Yosef's power ultimately hails from Parai. His power base is the Pharaoh. The Pharaoh said, everybody is subjugated to me. And you are my man. You represent me. You have the power that I gave you to rule over Egypt. But in the end, it wasn't Yosef's power. It was the Pharaoh's power. Hakisa egdo b'mecha. The throne towers above you. In the end, you're loyal to the throne. V'lachein ein hu ha'adam ha'masim. He's not the one. Levata es atzma osei ha'maleah shel Yehudi. He will not be able to express the full independence of a Yid. Because Yosef is himself, to some degree, subjugated. Even though he has all the power. And on a technical level, he has all the wherewithal. He can do all kinds of things that the rest of the Jewish people cannot do. But Yosef is part of that system. And because he's part of that system, in the end, having Yosef prepare everything, having Yosef set up the Jewish people's arrival in Mitzrayim and lay the foundations, means that we become part of that system too. V'lachein shalach yankiv davke es Yehuda. Our father Jacob wanted specifically Yehuda. Sheken Yehuda bita b'myuchad es ha'oiz v'ha'gvur ha'yudim. Yehuda represented Jewish courage. He represented Jewish independence. Yehuda was a person who was fiercely independent. When it came to a question of holding Binyamin back, who is the one who faced down Yosef? Who is the one who said, I don't care if you're the viceroy of Egypt. This will not stand. A Yiddish kind, a Jewish child, will not be inducted into the ranks of Mitzrayim and cut off from his people. And this came when Yehuda spoke the way he spoke to Yosef, when Yosef wanted to take Binyamin, masquerading as the viceroy. Shahaya ba'oyiz u'batekif. Yehuda, his approach was extraordinary. Extreme strength, extreme power. He refused to bow. L'loich shash mekoichai u'ma'amad shel Yosef. Totally unfazed by the power of Yosef. The powers to be did not touch him in any way, shape, or form. And teikif zeh, it was this kind of strength, shehevi l'kach shebevoyim shel Yankiv varelu mitzrayim, This is what gave the ability that when they actually did come to Mitzrayim, so then it says vayachzu ba vayifru vayiru ma'id. They were able to, so to speak, take hold of the land, and they were able to proliferate and succeed in extraordinary ways. In other words, kasha Yehudi eni mischashav b'agbalas hagalus. When a Yid does not, so to speak, fit himself into the galut system, he doesn't match and marry himself to the galut system, but he answers to a higher authority. And he lives within, he's a law-abiding citizen, but the ultimate authority is not the flag, it's not the constitution, it's not the institution of anything other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah. That ultimately is where his allegiance is. And when a Yid is able to stand like that with a full strength, knowing that he will not bow and he will not submit himself, and in the end, whom is Gabed Akshi Agolos, then he has the strength to be able to overpower the dark forces that seem to inundate and overwhelm. And a Yid can not only not become dominated by Golos, but a Yid instead becomes the trendsetter, transforming the reality of Golos. And that's Ves Yehuda Shalach Ofanav. And that's how it was then, and that's how it is today. So now the second part of this is, Rashi's not happy with that. That's not good enough. The second, but he says the other answer is that they actually establish a yeshiva. So here the Rebbe asks on a different occasion, actually very early on in the Rebbe's Nesius. He says, why did Yankov have to send Yehuda l'Mitzrayim to make a base Talmud? Did Yosef not have a library? Did Yosef not have a base Talmud? Yosef raised Jewish children in Mitzrayim. Surely he had a library. He must have had a little yeshiva for them. How did he raise them as Jewish children when they were being presented to the world as the children of the viceroy, and yet they had all the values of Yankov? And who did Yaakov study Torah with? With Ephraim. And who does he bless in the end? Menashe and Ephraim. They weren't like assimilated Egyptian kids. And then when Yankov came and he said, okay, let me talk to these teenagers, try to turn them around. They grew up. Yosef brought up his children right. So there had to have been a yeshiva. And we know there's the famous words of the Gemara in Yoma on page 28 that says, Me'ilom, Me'yimeim Shlav Yiseinu, Le'parshi Yeshiva Mehem. From the days of yore, from the days of our ancestors, we never didn't have a yeshiva. They always had a yeshiva. There's no question. Yosef had to have a yeshiva. Maybe he's giving instruction himself. His kids know how to learn. So it's true that Rebbe says Yosef did have a yeshiva. He had to have had a yeshiva. But his yeshiva was when he had time. His yeshiva was an after-school yeshiva. It was when Yosef was finished doing Yosef stuff, and he finished being viceroy, then he sat down and learned with the children. But it wasn't the yeshiva where they learned Torah all day. And that wasn't good enough. Legaba Yosef, it's not a chesaron, and the Rebbe says. For Yosef, it's not a deficiency. Yosef's after-school yeshiva works great for Yosef. Yosef's on a very high madrega, like it explains in Chassidus. He's Yosef Atzadik. He could be in the thick of Egypt and yet not become part of it. He remains in a state of dveikus, cleaving unto God at all times. That's very nice. And it's great for Yosef, but it doesn't work for everybody else. And therefore, Ritzoyinu shel Yankov hoya lahakum dafka beis Talmud. Yankov wanted there should be a beis Talmud, a place with his only Torah study. Not an academy with his Torah study and other things studied. A place with his only Torah study. That's it. Nothing else. What's called Teirasi Umnasi, where the whole focus is Torah, where there shouldn't be anything else mixed in. And for this, Yaakov can't rely on Yosef. Yosef represents a different paradigm. This Yehuda can be the person. And therefore, Yankov wants that on the very first day, a yeshiva should be established. Not a Yosef kind of yeshiva, a Yehuda kind of yeshiva. Not that there is room for Yosef's yeshiva. There is room. There's room for all kinds of yeshivas. And we need to cater to a wide spectrum of the Jewish community. But the fulcrum, the central fulcrum or foundation has to be a Yehuda yeshiva. A yeshiva where this Torah study is the singular focus and where the virtue of Yiddishkeit is the only thing, the only, so to speak, force that dominates. When you have a yeshiva like that and Torah study in that kind of fashion, then ultimately you can have a Jewish people that would be successful, not assimilate, not be overwhelmed and inundated, but instead maintain their independence and ultimately be born as the great nation of Am Yisrael.
Total independence.